spreading their message to millions. Kiss Talk, talking Kiss, Kiss fans and Kiss podcast, with your host, Mike from Nashville, Tom Watts, and special guest, it could be you. Now, here they are, your Kiss Talk crew.
We are just getting started!
All right, welcome to Kiss Talk. We're back. We're kind of like the, Kelly Ripa and whatever his name is of Kiss Talk, right?
Whoever that guy is this
week. Ryan Seacrest. But, and of course, I'm not going to say who's who, but it doesn't matter. We're just comparing ourselves to high-level talk shows because that's the way Tuck and I are. Tuck, welcome to the show. Tuck Watts.
All right, man. Yeah, we're back again. Going to talk about Kiss.
What?
And all the things going on in the world of Kiss right now. And there's a ton of stuff.
There he is. Because
hey, let's get something out of the way.
Okay.
Just real quick. What's your favorite era of the band and why?
Well, you're just going to throw it out there, just like that.
Yeah.
So, as I mentioned on the last show, I have a certain sentimental attachment to the Dynasty and Unmasked era. But yet, when I did my scientific study of what is my best Kiss album, my favorite Kiss album is not that. It comes from earlier. But I want, emotionally, I love the Dynasty and the Unmasked era, quite honestly. I love that. I don't know why it's brighter. They were gigantic to me at that point. So, yeah, that's it. What about you?
I don't know. You know, I think my favorite era was the build-up to Alive 2, that time frame. Because that's when, you know, we were all introduced to Kiss. I remember hearing Alive. My sister had Kiss Alive and being blown away, and then Destroyer and then Rock and Roll Over and Love Gun. So I think, and then the Cards came out, and that's when, you know, everything was just so big with Kiss. I think that's my favorite era.
Yeah, I mean, I love Kiss Alive too, also. And a lot of people love Kiss Alive as their favorite album, and a fantastic album, no doubt. And it really captured the band, saved the band. I get all that. But for me, I've always been a fan of Kiss Alive 2 because when it came out, there was something about it. The album cover, I was well into being a Kiss fan at that point, and I didn't know that it was completely fake when it came out, right? I mean,
I don't care now that it's completely fake.
I don't
fake.
Either. I still I'm still listening to it. I love the four tracks on side four. You know, I mean, I don't know. I talked about last week, Rocket Ride, one of my favorite Ace songs, and he opened with that on one of the cruise shows. So, anyway, just to back up real quick, we are the podcast that talks about Kiss, Kiss fans, and other Kiss podcast. But I wanted, since I didn't get to point out any podcast out there on the last episode, because Tuck and I just kind of dove right in again and I ran our complete hour out. But I want to point out a non-Kiss podcast that has done a fantastic job with an interview. And I don't know how many people even know this. There's a podcast called Walking the Floor with Chris Shefflett. And this is his guest on his December 17th, episode 130, is Ace Frehley. And totally, I mean, if you look at his list of artists, he releases a podcast every other week, and it's an interview with somebody. Ace is like one of a kind on the list. A lot of other types of artists. But I'm going to tell you, if you're a Kiss fan and you listen to podcasts, outstanding interview, not your typical questions, a good high-quality podcast, please go check that out. Even if that's the only episode that you check out of Chris's, I'm going to tell you, you're going to like it. Very well done. So there's one of my podcast features of the week. So amongst all the other podcasts that we hope you're listening to, we hope that you check that one out because he needs to be rewarded for his job on that. So I guess as far as other stuff goes, you kind of talk, you know, you look at Kiss News a little bit, which I mean, really, the news to me is a little slow right now, don't you think?
It is. It's as we build up to the tour, there's sort of a, I don't know, there's a little bit of radio silence.
Yeah.
I imagine they're tucked away, you know, going over the show and making sure everything works there. But
well, you know, I mean, quite honestly, Paul's finishing up the Soul Station album. So is he doing rehearsals for the tour while doing that, or is that put on hold for, I mean, it looks like Paul's been tied up with this for the last 2 or 3 weeks. So I don't know. And where we kind of left off, kind of where I wanted to lead into this, where we kind of left off last time was we kind of talked about the End of the World tour and what they were doing as far as promotion and what was being hyped. And quite honestly, you know, since we did that podcast, I've kind of noted, okay, what are they doing? We're 3 weeks, yeah, 3 weeks away from the first date in Vancouver, January 31st. And basically what I'm seeing are some targeted Facebook ads. For example, Tuck and I both are in the Tennessee area, and I got a Facebook ad that popped up and said from KISS's Facebook page, it says, "Hey, Tennessee, we're coming. Do you have your tickets yet?" And they attached the links for the Memphis and the Nashville shows that are happening. So I don't know if they're doing that across the country or if they're targeting shows that maybe aren't selling as well. But again, like we said in the last show, the hype has been a little picture of the stage, a great description of the excitement from Keith LaRue, but I don't know that I'm seeing a whole lot else to hype the tour. I know I listened to Podcast Rock City's episode, and one of the things that Jody Havnot, you know, noted is, you know, can we not get a glimpse of the stage? Can there not be something, Sonny and Joe and Jody kind of discussed, you know, can they not release some type of like press conference where they're on the stage, kind of like they compared it to when Creatures of the Night went out, that they, you know, did the press conference. Hey, you got to come see this cool stage. Would something like that help and hype this thing up and sell out the first few shows because they're not sold out? I don't know. What do you do, Tuck? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, first of all, Paul doing the Soul Station album, I don't know how much that actually takes away, because I imagine these guys are recording this stuff at their house, right? They're not going to a studio, are they?
Soul Station?
Yeah.
I would think so. I mean, you got a multi-piece band with a lot of vocals and
instruments. Well, there's probably studios involved, but I imagine Paul does a lot of, like the Ace thing. I imagine when he recorded that Fire and Water vocal, did he go to a studio, or does he have a studio set up at his house?
He probably did it at the house. You're probably right.
Or whatever. I mean, I just don't know how much it actually takes away. And I don't, as far as seeing the stage, yeah, I guess maybe we need, you know, it'd be nice to see that, but I don't know. I think they're trying to keep everything a secret until it actually happens, because in this day and age, soon as they hit the stage in Vancouver,
yeah,
everybody in the world's going to know what happened.
All the secrets are out. So that's why I think the thought would be, well, why don't you tease it and at least up the attendance for the first few shows, get some excitement generated, and maybe they're going to do that in another week or so, once they figure out what the ticket sales for the first 5 to 10 shows is. But let's talk about the elephant in the podcast world room, and that's that there's no opening band announced, or as far as anybody really knows, is even planned. So, you know, and that's a big deal considering that every major tour that KISS has had over the last 3 to 4 years has been a dual, you know, co-headlining, you know, something of that nature tour, because promoters felt like that they couldn't fill arenas, and I'm assuming that, right? I'm assuming that's the intent of these co-headlining tours with like Motley Crue and Def Leppard and whatnot.
Right.
So, But here we go. We're out on the end of the road tour, and there is no announcement for anybody. It's been a big topic in the yeah. you know, online and whatnot. So I think that's going to be a surprise.
I don't know if Kiss's last tour isn't selling tickets. If that's the thought, I don't know who you add to it to sell. I mean, Skid Row. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know
if that's even a consideration. I've heard everybody speculate, and there's the nostalgia side of it. You know,
yeah.
Would it be great if Cheap Trick was opening the shows? Abso-freaking-lutely.
But there's been some good points made that doesn't put butts in seats.
Right. And, you know, so from there, what do you do? I think the best you could do is a band kind of like Cheap Trick, probably Skid Row. I mean, that's what I would care about. I would not want them to go out and pull out the new, like they did in 96 and with Verve Pipe and all that stuff.
I agree. I don't want that. I don't care.
I would rather them just play for 2 hours.
I'm totally good with that. I'm totally good with an evening with Kiss type scenario. I don't have to have an opener by any means, but for Kiss not to have an opener, very unusual, right?
Could it be possible? And I'm just throwing this out there. I don't know if anybody else has brought this up. Could it be, you know, they come out, they play for an hour, they play acoustic for 30 minutes, they play for another hour, electric, you know, and it's a 2.5 hour show, and you get 24 songs or something.
Yeah, it's supposed to be between 21 and 25 songs, according to Paul. So we'll see.
You know, maybe it's what they did on the cruise. You know, they play some live, they do some, or you know, some electric, they play some acoustic, then they come back and they finish it up with the electric, and they're on stage for 3 hours or something. Because you know they're going to do solos. Why bands in 2019 are doing solos, I don't know. But I don't know. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I hope they don't overblow it with solos. But I've never been a huge fan of that stuff. But anyway, so I guess the last thing kind of in this week's news is, of course, a couple months ago, Rock and Roll Over was put on sale in orange vinyl with some cool little packages. I purchased the package that came with the t-shirt and whatnot. I got that. Of course, the release date for that was on January 5th, 1977. And I actually received my new copy of Rock and Roll Over vinyl on orange vinyl yesterday, which would be January 7th. So
right.
they almost hit it right on the nose. Very cool vinyl. For me, I really like the solo set a lot. I think that was a no-brainer that I think all of us wanted for many years. But Rock and Roll Over on orange vinyl, cool. It comes with a similarity of the original sticker that was in it of the album cover. Very cool. It also comes with a silver and black Mylar-ish sort of mini sticker, which probably the coolest thing about the whole package for me. I wish it was as large as the one that's the regular size like the original. I almost would have rather had that as to having the duplicate, because to some degree it takes away from the value of the original, having all the original albums with all the original stuff in them, which I have. I never took my stuff and messed it up back in the day. And the t-shirt is black with a silverish kind of brushed look Rock and Roll Over logo. So I'm very happy with that package. But as far as a package, I think I like it better than the solo album package. So I hope all of you got your Rock and Roll Over album in the last day or so and enjoy that because it's really cool. So Tuck and I have just kind of been jumping around here on some subjects, and we've had a long, long list of stuff. Is there anything out of the gate, or did you already hit your out of the gate subject there with your favorite era?
I think I hit my out of the gate there. Just finding out, you know, your favorite era. Yeah, you know, I just think it's important that we all know where we stand on these things that are important to, you know, the Kiss Army, if you will.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
So,
and I. I want to add to that, because there is no era of Kiss that I don't like. At no point did I leave Kiss fandom. A lot of people, you know, bowed out during Dynasty or Unmasked or The Elder or whatever. I never did. I bought their albums the day they came out. I listened to them and kind of took them for what they're worth, you know, and I wasn't as taken by The Elder when it came out, because I think there were a lot of people that did not know, number one, that it was coming out. Number two, that what they were about to put on was something that was going to be totally different. I remember, and I still have all the magazines that led up to that, that talked about our next album is a concept album. It's going to be very different. It's going to be a story. It's going to be, you know, and then eventually it turns into, it's going to be called The Elder. So I kind of knew that already. So right. When I put the album on, I hear you know, fanfare, I'm like, I'm not surprised. And I didn't like just go over this crap and throw it out the window, Sonny Pooney style. At what point did you hear The Elder, Tuck?
Man, that's a hard question. I'm not sure when I exactly first heard The Elder. I remember I had a cassette of it, and I had a little, you know, a little handheld tape player radio. It wasn't like a boom box. It just had one little speaker. And I remember putting that cassette in, and when I heard The Oath, I thought, holy, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And was blown away. Then the other stuff sort of was coming in, you know, Just a Boy, and I'm like, what in the world is this? But the good stuff, I loved Mr. Blackwell. I loved Escape from the Island.
That is
the heavier stuff was great to my ears, and there was a little weirdness going on, but it didn't really concern me. I tell you, the time, and I remember it like it was yesterday, I went and you got to remember, back in the day, you know, it was release day, right? Yep. And a lot of times the singles came out a couple of weeks, maybe a month before the record came out. And I remember buying a cassette single, being out at Camelot or one of the record stores that, you know, was around. And I bought a cassette single of Hide Your Heart.
Okay.
Never had heard it. Put it in the radio or, you know, in the car, and thought, what is this crap?
Really?
And that was when I was probably at my low point. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore.
I like Hide Your Heart.
This is garbage to me. And so, but then I went and saw them in Nashville, that tour.
Yep.
And that's when you know, there's kind of like two Hot in the Shade tours. There's the Hot in the Shade tour, and then about halfway through, they realized, let's start playing our old stuff again, you know, and they went real heavy. By the time they got to Nashville, they were real heavy in the old stuff at that point.
Didn't they open with I Stole Your Love?
I think so.
Yeah.
And it was that just kicked it back up for me, because it was what I wanted Kiss to be. Right.
Yeah.
And Hide Your Heart was not what I wanted Kiss to be. So, and then of course, you know, we've talked about my lack of appreciation for Let's Put the X in Sex. So I was at a low point in my Kiss fandom at that point.
Gotcha.
So that was it. That's for me. Not The Elder. The Elder's fine. The Elder had great hard rock stuff on it. It was just, it wasn't Love Gun, you know?
That's true. I mean, I recognize the fact. Well, I recognize the fact as soon as I put on Dynasty that we had moved to a new era. I mean, how old am I? 79. That's so I'm 11 or turning 12.
But I dare say that Dynasty wasn't, outside of I Was Made for Loving You and maybe Dirty Living, that's a pretty rocking record.
It is. It always was. And people judged it on that one song that, you know, Kissco Disco. And I was like, you guys are idiots. I mean, this is a great album. And how great is Ace Frehley on this album? Guys, I mean, after he, you know, had a bombastic solo album, finally, Ace is featured on an album. and has more songs on it than Gene, right?
Side two of Dynasty is almost perfect.
Yeah, that album is fantastic. No album cover. I love the album cover. I hated the album cover from Unmasked, but I love the music on it. I just always thought, you know, I get the production that it was produced poppy and that kind of thing. But man, you play those songs live. What songs of those have been played live? They rock. And I don't know. It's just like they took I Was Made for Loving You and rocked it out live. It works, guys. Come on.
I mean, when Paul played Million to One, or not a Million to One. Was it? No. What was the song on Dynasty? Did he play Save Your Love?
Ace played Save Your Love recently.
I'm thinking there was I'm losing my mind, I guess. But it seemed like when Paul was on
Magic
his solo
Touch.
Magic Touch, you're right. That's the one I'm thinking. And people just went crazy.
Yeah, because it's a great song to begin with, and played live, it's phenomenal. All that stuff is. You got to take it for what it is. You know, yeah, they get caught up in the production of the day. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
But Kiss has always done that. It's not like Destroyer was. The Great Expectations is not, you know, right down the middle of the plate. It's a little off the plate and
it is
low and outside.
And
you know,
they've always. I agree with you. They've always done that. And there's nothing that I don't know. There's just no reason to hate any Kiss, because it's all.
It may
good.
Not be your thing.
It's all decent stuff. Now, I do want to go back before we jump on one of these subjects that we need to get into. It's funny that you specifically said this song a minute ago, because if you ask me what is the worst Kiss song in their entire catalog, I will answer to anybody, and said that I would since the album came out. And it still holds true to this date with every other album that's come out afterwards. Mr. Blackwell is the worst Kiss song in their catalog. When you listen to that's one of those Gene songs that you go, Gene, it's 1981. You're releasing The Elder. Did you know in 2016 you're going to come up with an idea for a thing called The Vault? And that song would be great to put on that.
It doesn't have the lyric "Put my log in your fireplace,"
and that is Gene's most iconic moment, because how many of us talk about that over and over and over? It's great stuff, man.
I don't mind The Elder. You know, I was thinking as we were going, you know, to the show, I was thinking of, you know, things and eras, and that's why I sort of started with that question. But you know, the time when Eric was in the band, and especially when he had the makeup on, to me, he was so appreciative of that opportunity.
Right.
And when I look at pictures of the band at that point, my eyes go straight to Eric, because he was living what we all wanted to live. And you could just tell how much it meant to him.
Yeah. And you know, that's the only member that I never got to meet. Did you get to meet Eric?
No, I never met Eric.
Yeah. Yeah, so many people did, and Eric was so friendly to be able to do that. And I guess if I'd known that at the time, I would have made a bigger effort to try to do that. But I just wasn't in a position just to randomly go try to meet Kiss back then. But, that's the one autograph that I've paid for. And I actually... Mr. Rhino Rear provided that autograph for me. So, a little shout out to the O'Rear brothers. Hope they listen. Anyway.
I think they do. I think at least one of them does. Yeah. They probably do.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, how you doing, bud? So, let's jump on a couple of subjects here, because we're going to easily, because once Tuck and I start talking Kiss, it goes on forever, and we've spent 24 minutes as of right now, and we hadn't even started the podcast yet. So there you go, technically. But so to jump on one subject that may or may not be a lengthy subject, I want to talk about Vinnie Vincent for a minute, because he has two shows upcoming in Nashville, Tennessee, 1st of February. He's got Carmine Appice, or is it a piece? It's Vinnie Appice or Vinnie Appice?
Yeah, I don't know.
Two brothers pronounce them different ways. I always forget. Carmine and then Tony Franklin on bass are slated to be his band for these two shows. Carmine has been interviewed on a couple of different podcasts and live shows that there's been no rehearsal. There's really been little communication. Now, this was as of, say, 3 to 4 weeks ago, because I haven't heard anything lately. There's been zero promotion for the Vinnie Vincent show that's kind of been promoted, you know, like on Facebook or pop-up ads or, you know. So, obviously, everybody says it's not going to happen. Nobody's seen him play, whatever. Well, I'm going to take the position, and I know that when Vinny canceled Memphis, it was kind of the last straw for some people. But I'm going to take the position that this is going to happen. It's here in my hometown, so it's very easy for me to say that. I'm not traveling to it. I do have tickets to both shows, so it's kind of like one of those things. If I win, I win big. I get to see him twice. If I lose, I lose big, right? I don't know. I don't know how the refunds are working with I think it's Derek Christopher that's running this one, just like the Atlanta event. And there were some issues with that. But my hope is, if Vinny needed an outlet, he is welcome on this show to do that. And I would happy to be a conduit to push this thing, because I'm 110% behind the fact that he's got to be ready to move forward. He's got to be ready to make a positive impact. He's booked a Day of the Dead event in Atlanta later this spring. So I don't think he would want to not do this and continue to book personal appearances after that, because I would think he would face some backlash for that. So I think there's motivation for him to get this done. Now,
but Mike, there's been motivation before.
There has, but even if this turns out to be a very mild 3-song, 4-song, 5-song event, and then a lot of talking and stories, it's slated as an hour and a half, 90-minute event anyway. So that's all he really has to pull off is a few songs. Just to basically tell everybody, look, guys, I can still play. Look, we sounded good. I had some A-level talent in my band. And then it's over. He never technically has to do a thing again. All he's got to do is come out and say, yeah, I'm still Vinnie Vincent, guys. I can still do it. So do you take these months that he's been away? Now, I mean, it's been, what, four? Let's see, when was... October, 1st of November is when he kind of fumbled through those songs at the gathering, Andy Moen's gathering, in Miami. He's had time to get 4 or 5 songs together, in my opinion. So I'm going to say this is going to happen. All the other podcasters and everybody else under the sun, go ahead. It's kisstalkpodcast@gmail.com. Or the Facebook page. I don't care. I'm Mike. Tuck, the one on the other end going, yeah, that's not going to happen. At least I'm assuming you're saying that. Is that what you're saying, Tuck? Everybody wants it to happen, but nobody believes it's going
to
happen.
I want Vinny to be part of the family. I want Vinny to be productive. I want the people that like what he does to be able to enjoy what he does. But his personality, his attitude, and to quote Mark Slaughter, his burning of bridges, I don't know. I think it's like a train wreck, and people are just wanting to see it happen. I don't necessarily want to see him fail. I want to see him do well, but it's kind of like when you watch Dr. Phil. You don't watch it because you know these people are going to go on to bigger and better things. You're watching it to see the dirt, you know?
Yeah.
And to make yourself feel better that, you know what? My life's not all that bad.
Well, I think it was on Podcast Rock City where they were kind of joking about, you know, because Robert Fleischman obviously bailed after it appeared that he and Vinny had a little dispute of some type, because Robert was supposed to be here in Nashville to sing at this event, I guess when it was going to be in Memphis, really. And they kind of joked that now Jim Gillette should be the next singer, Jim Gillette being the lead singer of Nitro and former or ex-husband of Lita Ford. If you don't know who Jim Gillette is and you don't know who Nitro is, go check out a song called Freight Train. Your ears will be on fire and bleed. But it was, I like that Nitro album, by the way. So anyway, but I thought that was,
I like both Nitro albums, by the way.
So I kind of thought that that was unique pick, right, for them to go, yeah, it's going to be Jim Gillette, because he would fit it, you know? It's just too bad he didn't look like he used to, and Vinny doesn't look like he used to, because, I mean, both of them used to look like, if you know what Eric Carr's Rockheads are, both of them looked like they were in the Rockheads band. that hair was like an umbrella.
The Rockheads would be like, you got big hair.
So, anyway, that's my thoughts on Vinny and that thing that's upcoming. I'm excited. I hope it happens. So we'll see, right?
I hope it's listenable. Look, we've seen this guy now several times, and I don't think anybody's walked away going or having much good to say about it.
Well, and I hope that Vinny, his absence over the last few months here now, is going to give everybody something good to say, so that everybody can say, look, I was wrong. Vinny pulled it off. That would be my best hope, that Vinny pulls through this thing and makes this his positive moment. And then he can go do as many Day of the Dead shows and autograph events for the rest of his career, as far as I'm concerned. He needs to turn the image around.
I mean, he needs it bad. And if he doesn't pull it off here, I don't know how many more chances he's got. Now, I've got a guitar over here. And I play it occasionally. I am by no means professional. You're not a professional musician by any means. Is it possible to be a professional guitar player like Vinnie Vincent was and completely forget how to play the instrument?
I don't think so.
Maybe other people who have, I know people who listen to this podcast are semi-professional or local musicians or somewhat professional, maybe even professional musicians listen to the podcast. I'm not sure. We're not sure who all listens to this yet. Right. Is that possible? Is it possible you can be Vinnie Vincent in 1983 and in 2019 not have a clue how to play the instrument? Because when we saw him at the Gene Simmons Vault in Nashville, I don't know that it was like he had never held a guitar before in his life.
It kind of did seem like we had an imposter, didn't it? I mean,
yeah.
It seemed like there was a guy that came out that resembled Vinnie Vincent, but he knew a few chords.
I was waiting for Donahue to come out and then the real Vinnie Vincent to come out, and we'd just redo the Peter Criss show over. Where the imposter Peter Criss came out.
So I get what you're saying. I mean, I was there. We were both in person at the Nashville Vault, and that's exactly what we witnessed. Those of you that saw it on video, that's exactly what it was. It really.
But I just don't know that that's possible.
I don't think it is. I've been playing drums since I was 4 years old. I've gone through years of not playing. Now, when I've come back and started a permanent gig or something of that nature where I was playing every week again, yes, it took time for me to get back to where I needed to be, but I mean, I could still do what I wanted to do. I might not be the smoothest transitions and stuff like that, and I may stumble here or there, but I could still, fundamentally, I could play. Right?
I don't know. Was it all smoke and mirrors when he was doing it? I mean, come on. Lick It Up is not that difficult of a song, all right? So, did he do stuff with Kiss that was, and again, I don't know the music theory and the terminology and all that stuff. Did he do stuff with Kiss that people go, wow, that's very proficient technically. That's really amazing. Or was it all a trick?
Well, I mean, he was fast.
Was he? Or was it?
I mean, and sometimes fast doesn't mean you're good. It just means you can buzz a lot of notes. And there are a lot of famous, successful guitar players that, in the words of Gene and Paul, I think there's like a bumblebee.
Yeah.
That doesn't make you a good guitar player. No. That's just like a drummer. I had I was in a little three-piece jazz band one time. Guys that are about 20 years older than me, years ago. Little thing I played very short time in. And the guy, the bass player with the stand-up bass, he said, we've come across some good drummers before. You're a great drummer to play with. And he said, we had this one guy one time that wanted to play with us. And so he started tapping out some stuff. And he said he sounded really good just tapping and playing by himself and kind of showing me what he could do. But then when you put him with a band, he couldn't really play. I think that happens, but I just got to look at Vinny and I got to go, no, the guy played guitar. The guy put out albums. He wrote great songs. You don't just forget. So anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. I think anything short of is sorry, I was probably out of tune there.
Yeah, I don't claim to sing.
So. My sharps are a little flat. Or maybe it's my flats are a little sharp. And either way, he's really got to do that, I think. I think the longer he goes, it's just going to get harder for him.
Yeah.
And that would be my advice to Vinny.
I agree with you that this is probably his last opportunity. I mean, if this doesn't happen, then I can't imagine being able to sell another show. So, I don't know.
Or to get people excited. If he came back and he played decent and maybe it's a little rough around the edges, but plays decent and
all he's going
to
do
sets him up to, okay, I've got some of this stuff. I'm going to release an EP, four or five songs, six songs, or a record, whatever. And people would be like, okay, well, it was all right in Nashville. So I'm going to give this a shot. And
that's why I say all he's got to do is 3 to 5 good songs that make everybody go, oh, okay. And then he can grow on that, or he can just bow out and that be his legacy. It's like, hey, everybody, I can still play. Thank you very much. I'm gone.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. He just has to pull it off. So anyway, Vinny Vincent. There we go.
Hey, we're still talking about him. It's 2019. We're still talking about him.
And if we weren't saying this about him, we'd be going, man, where's that guy? I'm pretty sure I've tracked him down. Because I tracked him down to Clarksville. I know he was in Clarksville. But anyway, it turns out he's still in Tennessee. He's not in Clarksville.
Well, he's right around the corner from you for a while.
He still is. I'm just not going to say where because, I respect the guy. Some people don't know where he lives. Others are like, Mike, it's public knowledge. But I'm not going to be the guy to say it.
Well, but I'm saying he was in Murfreesboro, wasn't he, for a little bit?
He was in Smyrna, yeah, and then went to Clarksville, in my opinion. I don't have okay. – that's my facts.
Right, and I know about where everybody thinks that. Yeah.
He's still very close to me.
Yeah.
Hey, Vinny, how are you, man? No, not that close. He's just upstairs. Anyway, something else to talk about. I don't know. This is kind of a minor moment, but this popped up a little bit. Gene was on Jeopardy, right? He was a topic on Jeopardy. And then when the contestant picked the category, Gene was in a video, and he's the one that asked the question. Or answered the question, I guess, if it's Jeopardy, right? He gives you the answer.
You got to get the question. Yeah. He gives you the answer. Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of cool. And at the end, after the last question got picked and answered, Alex Trebek noted, he goes, before we move on, I just want to say that Gene Simmons did a fantastic job with us on these, and Kiss is fixing to embark on their final end of the road tour. And that was an Alex Trebek statement. And I thought, you know, I mean, we talked previously about what have they done to promote this tour and how they showed up on America's Got Talent, and now Gene pops up on Jeopardy, and they're going to be on The Price is Right next month in February, because they taped that back in early December.
Remember when they were on the Kids Are People Too show, and now they're on the shows our grandparents watched?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that was when Eric Carr was on the Kids Are People Too, right? Yeah,
right.
And somebody asked him about, and they asked him about Peter or something. I can't remember. I've seen it 1,000 times. You think I'd just repeat it? But in any way, so yeah, I thought that was kind of cool that. If you didn't see that, you go on YouTube, Gene Simmons on Jeopardy, and pop it up. It's worth watching for a minute if you're a Kiss guy. So
yeah,
that was something I wanted to bring up. So let's see. I think we got time for the next topic. Let's talk about Ace Frehley for a minute. So we talked about some of the stuff he did on the cruise already, but to talk about the Kiss Expo that was in New Jersey last month, and the fact that he's picked up the Gene Simmons Band, which is now the Ace Frehley Band, which are great Nashville friends here, and what a fantastic band!
And he has said that alcohol was a reason that he changed bands, right? I mean, didn't I read that somewhere that, or maybe I heard it that where there was some issues and he just wanted to remove himself from that situation to protect his sobriety. And so that's why he went with this new band.
Yeah. I think he made a comment on a recent interview that played a part into it, but wouldn't elaborate. I don't think he really called the guys out.
Right.
And actually said that there were substance abuse issues specifically, but I don't know. Anyway,
And to elaborate on that just a second, because I know you want to go on, but Todd Howarth, John Regan, and Richie Scarlett have a show booked in Boston, I think, coming up in April or something.
That's true. And what is that?
Return of the Comet or something.
Return of the Comet, yes. Thank you. Just all of a sudden drew a blank there. So Philip Schaus, Ryan Cook, and Jeremy Asbrock. And I think the current drummer that's going to do the next 4 Ace shows is Matt Starr. And I think that's going to rotate maybe to Chris Williams, the Accepts drummer, if I'm not mistaken. Because Brent Fitz is doing the Bruce Kulick stuff, trying to keep everybody straight. It seems like after the cruise, there were so many intertwining band members. I mean, because you got, Brent and Todd play with... I don't know. Brent plays with Slash, and man, it's just getting hard to keep all the people. But anyway, so I think it's been a big deal, in my opinion, that Ace is kind of moved this direction. And like we talked about when we were talking about the set list on the cruise, at first I kind of wanted to walk up to Ryan and Philip and Jeremy and go, man, you guys have done a great thing. Leading Ace to play these songs, and they will be the first ones to tell you in the at least 1,000 interviews they've done in the past 3 months that no, these were Ace's ideas. Ace wanted to do these songs. I mean, he knew he was going to do the cruise. He knew he had the audience. These songs came from Ace. It was his idea to open with Save Your Love, which I never would have guessed. I totally would have thought these guys said, hey, man, you got to play these songs. These are great songs. You don't play these when you go out. That's exactly what I would have thought happened, wouldn't you? Or would you have just said that because Ace has a new band, Ace now wants to play old Kiss stuff?
I think we even talked about that at some point on one of the shows that the thought was, these guys have been out playing these songs with Gene, the obscure stuff that – it would have led them to say, hey, look, it's working for Gene. Why don't you do that as well?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I guess it's not the case.
Tough one. So Ace does have some future dates all on the West Coast. I mean, it's like Seattle, a couple California dates, whatnot. And that's the only dates that he apparently has. And those are right here at the first of the year coming up in just a few couple, what, two, 3 weeks, about the time the end of the road tour kicks off. And then everything's open after that, as far as we can see, right? So, you know, you've got people out there go, oh, well, you know what that means. He's trying to keep some things open because he's going to jump on the tour, and they just don't want to say anything. Maybe, who knows? I don't know. I just don't know. All I know
is... And I think we've said, it wouldn't surprise us if, you know, Ace does show up a gig here or there. I don't know how much more he's going to be part of the tour, but
yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they play a show and Ace comes out and plays Rock and Roll All Night or something with them.
Yeah.
But Tommy's not going off stage. I guarantee you that.
No, I don't think so either. You know, I mean, it seems like there's never been an intent to communicate with Ace prior to any of this. They did what they needed to do on the cruise. Ace said in a recent, it was a Rolling Stone interview, I think, that it wasn't Paul or Gene that came to him and asked him to come up and do the acoustic set on the cruise. Doc McGee knocked on his door, you know, 30 or 40 minutes before and said, hey, why don't you come on stage and play a couple of songs? And he said it was even to the point where, you know, they handed him a guitar that had really heavy strings on it. He goes, guys, I'd like to play a little lead on these songs, even though it's acoustic. Can you put some thinner strings on it? So it was really we're doing this in a few minutes. Do you want to join us thing? And it's not like Paul knocked on his door or even Tommy knocked on his door. It was Doc McGee was sent to his room and said, hey, you want to do this? So again, is it just the way they like to not communicate with Ace, or is it a true intent to maybe hide the fact that Ace is going to do some things, dates on this tour? I don't know. We don't have an opening act. We don't know anything. We're 3 weeks away, right? So yeah. It's going to remain a topic until we get there, just like the stage and everything else. And then,
would it surprise you if it was announced that Ace Frehley's band is opening up for 40 or 50 shows on a tour? That would shock me, because I don't think that's going to happen.
No pun intended there, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it would. I don't know if that's too predictable for the guys. I mean, because of what happened on the cruise, it's like everybody was speculating, well, maybe Bruce's band will open, maybe Ace's band will open. Wouldn't that be cool, because we get all there as a Kiss? Yeah, it would be cool. But I'm pretty sure that Paul has basically gone against everything that we thought was cool for many, many years. So Paul's going to do what Paul wants to do. We know that. And I just, in my heart, I kind of go, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not what Paul wants to do. Yeah. So it's like I say, in 3 weeks, we're going to know what Paul wants to do, and we're going to be talking about a totally different subject list by that time.
And make no mistake, Paul calls the shots.
Yeah.
Anybody that watched the Vault event in Vegas where Paul Stanley shows up, Gene Simmons is one way prior to Paul getting on stage. And soon as Paul comes on stage, it's all, yes, sir. You know, I mean, it is all business.
Yep. So even to the, I mean, you know, when they talked about It's My Life, right? So
maybe they're asking us to, maybe that's, answer that. That might be Paul calling, asking us to put something together. I mean, we just talked about how you play drums. I play guitar.
Yeah.
Is this live? He may be like, hey guys, can you fill up about 40 shows?
There you go.
We got Verve Pipe doing the other 40. We want you guys.
If it's us, then I don't know. Might as well get Vinny. Whoa. I went back on what I said there. I didn't mean to do that. All right. Moving on to what else Ace is doing in his world is, you know, he's basically announced he's now working on the second covers album, right?
Right.
So, you know, Would I rather have new Ace music? Of course I would, especially after Spaceman. I thought it was a great album. But, we're going for volume two. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I think as long as the song selection's good, Ace is going to be fine. I liked the first of the cover versions that he chose for the most part.
Yeah, it was okay.
I mean,
it's not something I go listen to.
I you know what? I saw it. It was sitting on my desk. I don't know how it wound up on my desk, to be honest with you. But it was sitting here on my desk, and I thought the other day, wow, I haven't listened to that in a long time.
Yeah. So, talking about Spaceman for a minute, and this is something that I don't think was covered by any podcast. You know, everybody talked about, Spaceman's out. What do you think of it? Let's review the album on the podcast. All those things are great and wonderful and fun. But after it's released, does anybody really talk about the album itself? So, I don't know that anybody mentioned, but on the Billboard 200, the week of November 3rd, it debuts on the Billboard top 200 albums. That's phenomenal, right? Now, we've all had the discussion about what that means. It can mean that it sold a few thousand albums, which it did. It only sold a few thousand albums. But it debuted at number 49 on the Billboard chart, and it was there for that week, and then it was gone.
Yeah.
But I still think it's kind of cool, even in today's environment, that you can actually pull the page 72 out of the November 3rd Billboard, in case you care. Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper's The Star Is Born debuted at number 1. Which was a big battle. There was talk about, well, there's no way he'll debut at number 1 because you had the Star Is Born soundtrack and you had Greta Van Fleet at the same time. And there was, just looking at the debuts that way, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There are 11 new releases that outdid him before you hit Ace's number 49 position debut. But, I think that's cool. I don't know that anybody's mentioned that. That's an accomplishment, right? I mean,
I don't think it means what it once meant, but yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's cool to see.
It is cool to see, and I don't even know how that gets tabulated because, there was a whole lot of vinyl sold that week. I told you in a previous on another podcast, I bought 6 copies of the stupid vinyl. Now I have about 9 because I wound up buying some extras of a couple of the colors, which we'll eventually use as promo items for this podcast. So if you like stuff like that, stay tuned. But cool nonetheless. So Ace Frehley debuted at number 49 last year for his solo album. Cool stuff.
A completely unrelated Billboard note that has nothing to do with Kiss. Now they're allowing these Christmas songs. I know we're just a little removed from Christmas, but, they recharted right at Christmas there. Dean Martin recharted, Gene Autry, Andy Williams, Burl Ives, Bobby Helms, all these guys, all these old Christmas songs recharted. And that this was, I think, the first time they've ever allowed that to happen.
Right. And, yeah. I mean, actually, it looks pretty impressive when some of those chart, because I think they had noted, I can't remember which artist it was, but it had been 51 years since they had been on the chart. And maybe, I don't think it was Dean Martin. I think it was somebody else. But in any case, I think that's cool. And I think that's cool for the families of those artists, just from the standpoint of, hey, man, our great-great-grandfather, Dean Martin or whomever, he's on the charts. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, these songs would have charted every Christmas.
Yeah, they probably would have.
So, I mean, because these are, we're talking classic, chestnuts roasting on the open fire, Nat King Cole. I mean.
Yeah. So, one last note on Spaceman. Did you have a favorite track on that album?
Do I have a favorite track on the Spaceman album?
I think I do. I'm going to pull those tracks up here just to make sure that I don't say the wrong one.
Yeah.
Because I really want to kind of... I can tell you out of the gate that it wasn't one of the singles. Yeah.
Right.
So... I think
do you buy the Ace line that he didn't realize he was rewriting Beth?
So in this interview that I told you about that Chris Shefflett did, he specifically asked where those, because Ace leads off with talking about the singles that were released. He talks about, you know, just recently writing Bronx Boy and then part of Rockin' with the Boys was written that he said the chorus was written back during the Kiss days. He never presented it because he never was happy with the verse. So that verse, what I took from that was, even though the rest of us are kind of going, that's Beth, right? I mean, isn't that, right. That's been kind of the general consensus. He's basically claiming that he just wrote that for this album recently. So does that dispute? I mean, if you take that for what it is, does that dispute the fact that it's a copy?
Yeah, I don't know how. You know, you were involved in the band when that happened, when Beth was, you know, huge.
Yeah,
you gotta know, right? I mean, you gotta. I don't know if Vinnie Vincent doesn't know he can't play guitar. Maybe he didn't.
Yeah. Here we go. So
you keep trying to get Vinny on the show. I keep shooting it in the foot. So he'll be like, "Yeah, that white."
All I want is Vinny to. I just want Vinny to have a safe place. You know, the little thing the police department use with little hands. Safe place. This is Vinny's safe place. At least till February 3rd, or whatever. But I think it's February 2nd and 3rd, something like that. Anyway, well, again. That'll be something else to talk about when that happens. So, you know, looking at the tracks, I think I want to go back the Eddie Money cover was really popular with people. Again, I don't Ace's covers other than 2000 Man and New York Groove, they just don't ever really do it for me.
Would you call Into the Night a cover?
No, I don't think of it as a cover.
Right.
But
right, that's another Russ Ballard song, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to say I want to go back. I just happened to note it because it's just above Mission to Mars, which even though I would, before this album came out, I was probably on record for saying, I hope he doesn't do any space songs. You know, I wish he would let go of the whole space thing for a solo album. Of course, he names the album Spaceman. But Mission to Mars, I really liked that song. I thought it was a great song. I thought Your Wish Is My Command, the co-write with Gene, was way better than I thought it was going to be. I think...
Without You, I'm Nothing is a decent song.
It's okay, but I think it's been noted before that maybe it shouldn't have been the opener on this album. I don't think you kick off the album with that song. I may be wrong.
So, all right, let's talk about this just a second, because... Bands have there's a different mentality somewhere, because you know when you think of there's a lot of records that I think have probably not the best opening song, but for some reason the bands love, like when A Different Kind of Truth, Van Halen, Tattoo opens that record, and that is probably, I like the song, but it's probably not the best song to open the record with.
That's true. It's probably not the best song to open an album with, but it was probably the best song to release as the opening track, because I don't know that there was anything else on there that would have elevated that album to any degree.
Well, and Van Halen with Roth really wasn't a singles band anyway.
Right. I agree.
Right. But anyway, there's artists, we need to talk to these guys, you know, next time we're at Rockin' Pod, or we've got somebody on the show, and talk to them about what goes into making an opening song, because their idea of what's an opening song is sometimes different than what I think it would be. And I want to know why. that is.
Well, so, and it seems like the mentality now with streaming, the release, the first release that usually comes out before an album is actually released is not the best song. It's not, you know, in the past, it would they would try to put out a single, right? You know, something that sparked your attention, that made you want to find out when that album was coming out, and then potentially
right, like Hide Your Heart.
Yeah, that was a great song, and it's clearly Tuck. It's clearly been successful for the band, and obviously with who else recorded that? Molly Hatchett.
Robin Beck.
Ace Frehley, Bonnie Tyler. None of those people had hits with it. Only Kiss had a hit with that, and Kiss still plays it live today. And it's a great live song because people sing along to it probably more than any other Kiss song. And it's, for me, when I'm standing there on the cruise and that whole ship is singing that song, and that's one of the few that everybody will sing along to for some weird reason. It is goosebumps, man. It's a great song. Anyway, my thoughts on Hide Your Heart.
We've been all over the place here.
We have, and I'm trying to. We're getting close. We just hit an hour. So let's see what else we got on Ace here.
This is Ace related. Guitar player Jeremy Asbrock. Has a GoFundMe set up.
Thank you for bringing that up.
And they're trying to raise some money. Brandi Goldsboro's trying to raise some money because he's ran into a medical issue, had to be hospitalized. Yeah. There was some issue with the insurance or whatever. They're just trying to raise some money for him to make that a little bit easier for him. So I think if you go on GoFundMe and search for Rock for Asbrock, you'll find that if you want to, you know, give a couple of bucks or, you know, a bunch of money, I'm sure it would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, so they did have an incentive for that. But so he's a type 1 diabetic and had a very serious issue just before New Year's. His insurance didn't start till New Year's, so he ran up a pretty hefty bill at the hospital. And that's what everybody's trying to help with. And if you're in the Nashville area or the vicinity, on February 9th, there's a Rock for Asbrock event. Back to the rock and roll residency. I think everybody listening to the show probably understands that. And there are a lot of people that are going to get together and play at Mercy Lounge to try to raise money for to help Jeremy pay for that hospital right. bill, $10.
I just visited the GoFundMe page. Their goal was $10,000.
Yep.
In 5 days, there is $6,410 as I'm looking at it here.
That's great.
So they're well on their way to their goal. And some of these, some of these guys giving $100, $500 bucks.
I think the highest donation was $1,000. And what they were going to give. I can't remember tickets to one of the big shows here in Nashville, and I can't recall what it is right this minute. But for the biggest donor up to a certain date, and I can't remember what that was. I apologize. But please, if you can help out the Rock for Asbrock GoFundMe page, I would encourage you to do that. So
yeah, and there's $5. You know, people are giving $5.
Every little bit helps. I mean, when you're talking, I mean, he probably hit the $40,000 mark on a hospital visit like this. And I know that from family experience that yes, you can run up that kind of bill in 2 or 3 days.
So, quick, very quick. Yeah.
But,
and it's tough on these guys cause you know, their insurance isn't, there's nobody giving them insurance.
Right.
They're not working at a place that has insurance. So yeah, if you can help out, he's a great guy too. So
absolutely. And had never had an issue like this with his type 1. And that's, it is uncommon for that to happen, but when you go into that scenario, it can really kill you. I mean, you can die very, very quickly. And if you're not tended to immediately, you will die. I mean, once your body makes that dive. So, but anyway, check that out and please help out Jeremy where you can. I think I've just peeked over at it. He was in ICU for what looks like 2 days. So, yeah, he's probably got tens of thousands of dollars. So, the last thing I was going to hit on with the Ace thing was in a probably in that same Rolling Stone interview that I recently read, Ace talks about Kiss meets the Phantom, and he talks about, you know, Paul and Gene say that they hate that movie, and, you know, they were sold a bill of goods on it. It was supposed to be a mix of Star Wars and whatever. But Ace says that he had a blast doing it. He said there were long days, and parts that he hated was being there at 6 a.m. getting his makeup on and then walking out and the director saying, well, we don't really need you till 3 o'clock this afternoon. And that would piss him off. But he said, realistically, he had a blast. He said he spent a lot of time in a golf cart roaming around the amusement park because there was nothing else to do. But he remembers it as a very positive experience. So I think that's has anybody else ever commented on that movie other than Paul and Gene saying how horrible it was? So I thought that was kind of cool.
That was Magic Mountain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd love to take a golf cart in an empty amusement park. Just go ride it around.
Well, having been around the film industry, you know, those waits can be brutal. And for people who have issues like Ace has had, yeah, that's not a good combination.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no telling what it turned into by the time he rode around the park a few times. So
yeah, and you know, especially at that point when, you know, there's nobody saying no to them about anything.
Yeah,
and that goes for all of them. I mean, they all had their issues with that. You know, not alcohol, but with ego and those sorts of things. So, Ace's is just a little more noticeable, I believe.
Right. Absolutely. So I guess one other quick note. You know, FYE going to sell the vault beginning February 1 for $1,500. Not really clear whether you get that in the store or whether it's just something online.
Is it $1,500?
Yeah. So Gene rolled out a couple weeks back. You can sign up to go to one of his vault experiences on the tour that he's going to do. It's $2,000. What he changed about it this year was he's not going to play. Not really telling stories. He's going to spend the entire time just hanging out with everybody. You get the photo, you get the signature. The actual vault will not be there. So they're going to ship you the vault. So they've changed it up a little bit to make it more time with Gene versus, you know, having the story time and the guest and the guitar player, where he gets up and plays a few songs and that kind of thing. So I think it's good that they changed it up because I think the old format had kind of run its course. But to the alternate to that, if you don't want to spend $2,000, you can simply pay $1,500 and they'll just ship you a vault. No autograph, no meet Gene, no picture. The experience is basically gone. It becomes the material item at that point. And with that, FYE, like I said, now has that on their website that you can order it for $1,500.
Yeah. Now, and it does come with the book. It comes with the coin and the action figure.
Yeah. It doesn't say that it comes with anything special inside the little compartment. Now, I find that a little bit hard to believe that they wouldn't put something in there. Now, the other thing is, when I look at from the business side of this, is Gene says, okay, we didn't sell as many as we want. We got 2,500 of these things left, or whatever's left of them, right? Let's contact the retailers. Let's see if somebody's willing to buy 500 of them at 50% off. Mandate that they have to sell it for 1,500 because they can't compete with me. And that gets some of them out of our inventory. Right, and reduces his inventory.
Right.
I could see that happening. Because he did make some promises to all of us that purchased the vault that there would not be a different version of this, there would not be a cheaper version of this that was the same thing. And so he's kind of altered it enough I think. I think that's reasonable. You know, if you pay $1,500 for the physical product and you don't get the experience, I'm not disappointed as a purchaser of the vault.
I mean, I think paying, you know, for $500, what you got to experience there that day.
Yeah, I think
that was worth $500.
Absolutely. If people were paying for two of us, absolutely, because both of us got to do that. It wasn't just me that spent $500 more for that experience. I mean, you got to come with me. I think there's value in that, and I don't feel cheated. I'm good with it still. Now, I mean, if he came out and he did one, he said, okay, the vault's now $750. Then you kind of get into that range where you go, I don't feel good about that. But, and I hope it doesn't get there. I hope that we don't, you know, 2 years from now, I hope we can't go to Big Lots and buy one for $100 just because Gene had to flush them out, you know, because Rhino Records is like, Gene, man, we got all these things. We got to get some kind of money for them. So, right. You know, how long does that last? I mean, because if, you know, if they wind up at Big Lots or whatever, you know, that's I think that's a bad deal. And it doesn't say a lot. But
right. Well, and this also, does the $1,500, because obviously pirating was an issue for Gene.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that he was trying to prevent. And as far as I know, I really haven't, I'm not going to these websites like I used to, but I've not really heard of it, you know, floating around in trading circles and those sorts of things. So does the $1,500 keep that at bay a little bit, because it keeps?
I think it does. I mean,
out of the market?
Yeah, this is not something that I've seen on some of the bootleg sites and that kind of thing. He's done a pretty good job at controlling that. And he certainly put out a strong message in the beginning that, oh, I will come after you. And the people that, you know, you were there with me, Tuck, we had to sign a document that said, you know, all the legalese, so to speak. So he basically had, whether it was illegal or not, a document with signatures on it that said, you know, this, not to share this information, not to do this with this event, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Does that, you know, if I order it on FYE.com right now, are they going to pop up a little document that says I have to sign that and say I'm not going to file share? I don't know.
And then how legally binding is that?
I don't know that it really is. I mean, it's as binding as the original law is to begin with. I mean, technically none of us are supposed to take any album, put it out onto the public domain, and say, download this for free. That's right. Illegal to begin with. There's laws already in place for that. So, but just, you know, you can chase that all day long. All right. So we are an hour and 12 minutes into this episode, and we try to keep them reasonable so you can listen to them in a reasonable way.
Hope you haven't cussed too much while we've been talking here. Like, I love Hide Your Heart, you big flipping moron. You know, whatever.
No, man, that's what makes for good discussion. So we've already had some contact for some listeners out there, or some sources anyway, that are interested in being on the show. We're going to line those up. And as we said before, if you're interested in talking about a topic and you've always wanted to be on one of the KISS podcasts, this is your podcast too. We want to make sure that fans of KISS get their opportunity. So you can shoot us an email at kisstalkpodcast@gmail.com and kind of tell us what your idea is, and we will certainly try to make arrangements for you to be part of our show. Tuck and I would love a third opinion. That way one of us will be wrong.
And it'll probably be me.
No. I don't know. I'm the one that says, I like, let's put the X in sex. So I don't know how popular that comment is. So
I don't even know who you are anymore.
Oh, all right. Tuck, man, I appreciate you being a part of the show. It's a good time.
Thanks for asking me, man.
Yep. So everybody, we appreciate you listening. Thank you so much. Already gave you the email address. We got a great Facebook page out there. We try to update with the news when it breaks. And we love comments. We love likes, and we love reviews on iTunes. So we appreciate everybody. So thanks. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
Kiss Talk is an Into Rock podcast production.